Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax. I am here with Michael Brazenly.
Hi everyone.
All right. And oh, that came through nice and loud. Right? That's good, dude. Being up right up on that microphone, that's where it's at. Yeah, right. I might have to turn yours down a little bit. All right. So anyway, this is the follow-up episode to I had told you guys about my kidney issue. Just as a quick recap, I thought that I had a kidney stone that would have been my third kidney stone. And the pain got to the point that I'm like, well, I got to go to the hospital because I need some drugs to get me through until I can pass my stone. And then should be good to go after that, because that is definitely unpleasant. So I go to the hospital and they do a CT scan while I'm there. And the doctor comes back and he says, hey, you don't have a kidney stone. It turns out you have a mass on your kidney. And so, good news, no kidney stone, because that's no fun. But the bad news is, of course, what is this mass? Well, yesterday, as we record this, we're recording this on November 18th, 2025. So yesterday, I went to the specialist. I had gotten CT scans done at the request of the specialist. Went to the specialist yesterday, got the results. And it turns out that this mass that is growing on my kidney is cancer. So that's bad. But the good news is it was caught early and it's at a size that should be treatable. So the doctor said that this is a type of cancer that does spread, but you don't usually worry about it spreading until it gets to like 8 to 10 centimeters in size. And mine is only 5 centimeters, about 2 inches. And so that's good, because at this point he said there doesn't appear to be any signs that it has spread. It's just contained in this mass that's growing in and out of my kidney. And so it's got to come out. The mass has to come out. So that is scheduled for January. And until then, I've been very fortunate that I haven't been in pain, because again, it was pain that drove me to the hospital. And it's kind of a weird thing, because since I went to the hospital, I haven't had any pain. And that tells me that if I hadn't have gone to the hospital that day, I probably would not have gone to the hospital at all, because I would have assumed, oh, my kidney stone must have just passed without me realizing it, and now I'm better. So, dude, I will take luck. You know, yep. Luck has definitely shown on my shoulders in this instance, and I will be scheduled in January for, let me grab this paper, for a robotic partial nephrectomy. So a nephrectomy is a removal of the kidney, but this will be just partial. The doctor said that they will cut out the entire tumor and then cut out some of the surrounding tissue as well, just to make sure they get everything out.
Do you know which hospital?
Yeah, it's either going to be Summerlin Hospital, which is nice. It's fancy out there.
I actually talked to some people about that, and they said Summerlin is the best.
Yeah, and that's where it's most likely going to be. Yeah, Summerlin, for those of you not familiar with Vegas, is like the fancy rich part of Vegas, the rich people area. It's all huge master.
So they have all those nice machines over
there. Yeah, exactly. And that's where the doctor prefers to do it as well, as long as he can get scheduled. Otherwise, it will be at St. something or other. I don't know, one of the Catholic hospitals that's on Warm Springs and the 215, just out of the bed.
Yeah. Ask him to do it at Summerlin.
Yeah.
They have all the
And I already know
there.
That's his preference. Yeah. And so that's fine. They're both equally inconvenient to me, but yeah, I'm good with Summerlin Hospital. I'll go where rich people go. So, dude.
Well, you're health and just paying a lot of money for it, so yeah, might as well go
that's
there.
That's the truth, dude. Yeah. And so on that note, the doctor asked me, he said, you know, at the stage it's at, it's not urgent. It doesn't have to come out immediately, but we can't wait 6 months. So he said, do you want to get it done in December or January? And there were a couple of factors. One of them being December, it's a lot of work. You know, like we get a lot of overtime in December, and it would be nice to miss some of that. But I also get pretty good tips, and so I don't want to miss those. But the bigger factor is, it's probably going to be really expensive. And I have good health insurance, NALC high option. But dude, I mean, when the surgery costs, I mean, you guys know how American healthcare is. The surgery, the retail price is going to be like $220,000.
Yeah.
And then, like my emergency room visit, the retail price for that was like $38,000 for an hour in the emergency room, one scan. So I know my out-of-pocket, I don't know how much it's going to be, but we have the catastrophic limit of like $7,000 or whatever it is. So if I do that in December, I hit the limit, doesn't do me any good. But if I go in January and I hit the limit, now, dude, the whole rest of the year, I'm golden. I can finally get hair plugs. So anyway, so that's the plan. Sometime in January. And then the risks of the surgery are pretty minimal. There's always risk anytime you go under general anesthesia. And my father had a bad experience with general anesthesia. It essentially activated his underlying Alzheimer's disease that we didn't know about. And he never really was the same after the anesthesia. It didn't cause his Alzheimer's. His Alzheimer's was already progressing. But because of a bad reaction to the anesthesia, like, he never really came back. So, you know, that's a little bit concerning. And then anytime you go under general anesthesia, there's always a little concern. There's also, with this surgery in particular, there's a risk of bleeding. So what happens is there's a main vein that goes into your kidney, or a main artery, I should say. And then your kidney does all the work with the blood. And then it comes out in a main vein. And so the doctor will pinch off the main artery, do all of his surgery. And he said that I'll still lose a good amount of blood. He said I'd lose about a liter, but that's not enough that I would need a transfusion. And then sew everything back up and close it all off, and then open the valve back up and see if there's any leaks. And hopefully there's no leaks, and then close everything up and that's it. Surgery's over. And then I have to stay in the hospital overnight because if any leaks, if it springs a leak, that's a problem, you know, because it's on the inside and like, how do you stop that? So I'll stay in this hospital overnight and then I should be good to go. And I would assume after that, I have to be delicate with it. Like, I can't go and play rugby the next day or, you know, anything like that. So we'll see how that goes. So that's pretty much it. Oh, and then he also said that, you know, the most important thing with doing the surgery is to get all the cancer out. And so right now it looks like I'll maybe lose 40% of my kidney. But if he gets in there and it looks like the cancer's kind of spreading around, maybe I lose the whole kidney. But I'm carrying another one.
Well, thankfully you have two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I've been lugging around this extra kidney for no good reason.
Now you just have to use the bathroom more times.
I already have to use the bathroom more times. So,
yeah, make sure you have spare bottles around.
Yeah, don't tell Leslie. So anyway, so that's the health update. Now, we have other stuff to talk about. Anything else you think we should cover with that health?
No. I mean, the funny thing is I also went to a doctor's appointment on the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you about that one.
Go ahead, because it's on the job.
Yeah, that was workman's comp. And during the investigative interview, and I told him that, hey, you know, these things, pain is happening and it's hard to move my shoulder to drive and all that stuff. I told that in the investigative interview.
And you had injured your shoulder at work.
At work. It was carrying those stupid Amazon packages that had liquid in it. It doesn't even say it's liquid or heavy or anything on the box, you know, they're telling you anything.
Right.
Yet the box weighs like 50 pounds, you know, and so when I'm delivering it to like a school, when their doors are like freaking heavy as hell and you're trying to carry one package on one arm. And the thing is, I should just let it on the ground and then open the door. But you know how it is.
Yeah, of course.
Lay anything down because that means you have to pick it back up. You don't want to hurt your back. So I did the stupid thing of opening the door and then the package shifted and I'm trying to catch it from falling. And then I tweaked my shoulder. So anyway.
Right.
The whole thing is that now I had a surgery done last year, but I'm supposed to have a physical therapy. But you know how it is when you're going through the post office doctor, that they give you crap and they don't know what they're doing. Sure. And so this whole time, you know, I've been waiting on physical therapy. Nothing's ever happened. And then now management is issuing me discipline for calling in sick.
You know? Right. We talked about that on a previous episode.
Exactly.
This bullshit. Right. 7-day or 14-day suspension. You're right on the edge of getting fired. Right.
And the 7-day was still in process. So it's an educated discipline anyway. Yeah. We made a decision to go see that. Basically, my station manager didn't believe that I had workman's comp because he didn't know that I had it because he wasn't here yet.
Isn't this like in your personnel file?
It is. So I told him, I said, hey, I believe it's in your file. You can probably look it up. Then he looks at her and goes, oh, it says you got 100%. And I'm going, okay, that shows you that I had Workman's Cop still open.
Right.
Okay. And he still didn't believe me. So I said, fine. And then he goes, fine, then if you get FMLA, then we'll get rid of all these things. Okay.
Great.
So now I skate. So in Vegas, we don't have a lot of Workman's Cop doctors.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, thankfully our union actually,
we had a guy come to the union hall and give a presentation like, hey, if you have workers' comp, you should come and see us.
Right. So that's who I contacted.
Okay.
And so I made an appointment and I explained to him exactly what happened. They're like, oh, yeah, since your previous doctor released you, now you can come and see us.
I'm there,
like,
you go.
Good. Because it's still open because I haven't done the physical therapy yet.
Okay.
And so I go in, and you know what the amazing part was?
Tell me.
Everybody that was waiting in the waiting area were all mail carriers.
Dude, it is a physically demanding and damaging job.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing is that tells me that they are doing their job right. And here's the crazy part. They knew they had all the paperwork ready.
Oh, that's cool.
They had all ready. They know exactly what the workman's comp. And it was just so nice to.
It's not like going to Concentra.
Right. It's so nice to deal with people that know what a workman's comp is.
Yeah, okay? For sure.
And so when I explain it to my doctor about what's happening, they're trying to fire me. So I'm going to have to start getting the FMLA.
Right.
Doctor's like, well, that's no problem getting you the FMLA because of your problems.
Right.
But in reality, if management fires you while you had the workman's comp, that's a huge lawsuit against the post office.
For the results of an on-the-job injury. Yeah.
And this is the idiots that we got in our post office that could cause lawsuits
a big lawsuit.
And lose all that extra money because of the people think they have the power to do whatever they want.
Right.
Yet we're supposed to be broke.
Dude, that's the irrational side of management. Mm-hmm. That, we're supposed to be pinching these pennies, but yet look at all the money they blow on grievances and mistreating carriers.
Right.
And
look at all this time off that we had for investigative interviews, sitting with the grievances and all that.
Yeah.
And it's all going to be gone because I'm going to get FMLA anyway.
Right.
So to get all thrown out. So all this wasted effort and possibility, if they did try to fire me, that they could be sued.
Yeah. And then the number of people who they'll put on like emergency placement and then have to bring them back and pay all their back pay for no work.
Right.
Like, it's idiotic.
Right. It's just causing more problems in the post office. And then all it is they're trying to force an issue with the carriers to scare them.
Right.
But in reality, why? Because this is something that, because nobody really benefits.
No, and Corey talks about, part of the issue Corey Walton talks about is that management doesn't have to feel the negative effect of wasting all this money on grievances, on improper discipline and shit like that. Like, it doesn't come out of the manager's pocket.
Right. So, and here's something that I was sitting down to do 14-day suspension on that meeting. The manager basically said, because my contention was that they had to follow all the steps of rules and process and so on, including that to place the characteristic sick leave, you have to follow these five procedures.
Yeah, okay? We talked about that on that. Yeah.
And his answer is, oh, it's optional.
Wow.
So management thinks it's optional to follow the employee labor manual.
Yeah, we read that section of the ELM. There was nothing in there about it. I mean, it's optional if you want the carrier's behavior to improve, if you want to hold the carrier accountable.
No. It's not optional. This is put in place.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, if they want to go forward, they could always just ignore it completely.
It actually says if management found that the carrier is abusing sick leave,
this is
the process what you follow
exactly
before you issue discipline.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's in process. The employee labor manual means they have to follow that because.
Right.
What is employee labor manual made for?
Telling management how
carriers,
to do their job.
All carriers. All employees.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So they have to follow it, you know?
Right.
And so when they say it's optional, the reason they're using that as optional, because our union is allowing them to do the crap. Okay? Because here's the thing. I can blame my branch, but I know that it's going nationwide.
Right. Yeah, it's not just our branch where there's a problem nationwide. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the whole idea of contract enforcement, like, we already have the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get these watered down settlements that say management will abide by the contract,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's what the contract is.
And so now the management thinks oh, it's optional. We can do whatever we want because we don't have to follow the rules.
Right, because there's no fallout from it. There's no repercussions or what's the word I'm looking for? Sanction. There's no sanction on that.
No accountability.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I think that is the problem that's happening nationwide.
Right.
We're not holding these magicians accountable because they think they can do whatever they want, break whatever rules they want, and get away with it because they have.
Right. So we have something similar that's a good segue in like the issues we have within our own branch where there's no sanction for just disregarding the bylaws or the election rules or whatever it is. And even when national has to step in and be like, no, that's not right. Oh, well.
And here's the thing. Let's say we settle on a grievance with saying the management broke this rule. What do they usually get on the resolve?
We'll comply or...
Yeah, we'll comply or slap on the wrist and say, don't do it again. And you know they'll break that rule again.
Yeah, they do it again, because there's no reason not to.
Right, because because they'll always the result is slap on their hand and say, don't do it again.
Right.
Nothing holds them accountable to stop it from doing it.
So to go back to turn this to my own issue, which is the last thing I want to talk about today, my station has availability for two stewards and we still only have one. Right. And it's been this way for quite some time. And so the branch president put up an advertisement. Hey, we're looking for a steward. Anybody want to apply? Here's the deadline. So I put in my application once again to be steward because, as you guys know, I was denied my right to run for steward in the election because of the issue that's still pending at national.
When did that happen?
November? Or when was our election? October?
No. When was the
application? I think it was like September.
And it says due by when?
It was like the end of September or the end of August or something like that. It's been a while.
No. For the second steward.
Yeah. Yeah. He put that up before the election or before the election results. So it's been a few months.
So, okay.
It's been a while.
Okay.
Right. Longer than I can tell you what the bylaws say. The bylaws say upon vacancy, the president is supposed to appoint it.
And when was it vacant?
It's been vacant for like a year.
Okay.
It's been vacant for
a long
time.
There was two people at your station?
A long time ago.
Oh, that was
I remember that. Dave left.
Yeah.
When he went to Silverado, it's been vacant since then.
Right.
So that's
like a year?
It's a long time. Okay. Yeah. It's been a while. So anyway.
So he's not doing his job to fill it, especially when somebody's requesting to be a steward.
But there's a development here.
I know.
Because, that's right, because I've already talked to you about this. So
I'm making it, leading it up to make it sound good.
Understood. So so I put in my application, and then, of course, as always, they just sit on it. And, you know, not in the fun way, like Fonzie, hey, sit on it. Right, they just sit on the application.
So you know Alan, he's going to ask, well, hey, how come you haven't made this decision yet? And then what's the response?
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. I sent an email that says like, hey, what's the story with this, with my application? You know, it's been a while. What are we doing with it? Yeah. And this is the response I got.
Yeah.
Alan, that's me. I cannot remember you attending any steward meetings. So there's more, but right away, this start is disingenuous because...
He hasn't made you a steward yet.
Right. I'm not a steward.
This is a steward meeting.
When I was a steward, I went to steward meetings. And my recollection is the people who are at the steward meetings are stewards. All stewards.
Yeah. Majority of them.
Majority of them.
It's rare that somebody shows up that's not a steward.
Yeah, that would be very unusual.
That's because I'm showing up when I'm not a steward.
Well, so, there you go. Yeah. And you're probably the only one.
Usually.
Yeah. So anyway, so I can't remember you attending any steward meetings. I was hoping we would talk at any one of them. We'll get into more about the talking in just a sec.
Well, then maybe she should have informed you to say, I want to talk to you about it at this meeting.
That's exactly right.
But why didn't that happen?
We're going to get into that. Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah, Michael. Why didn't that happen?
He goes on. Perhaps you can tell me when we talk why you have not attended, but are allegedly interested in representing the membership. It's a nice dig there, that allegedly interested. Because apparently, if I, you know, to follow this line of reasoning, if I were interested, I would be going to the steward meetings when I'm not a steward.
Right.
Now, I've been to many steward meetings, and I'm ready to go again, but... You know, he says, maybe you can tell me when we talk.
So here's the funny thing.
Yeah.
When you were alternate steward.
Yeah.
Do you think you needed to go to these meetings?
I know from going to, I went to them and I can tell you.
I know, but I'm just saying.
No.
Do you have to go to these meetings as an alternate?
Well, you know, It's funny.
Not in reality. Because in the bylaws says that as a steward, you have to go to get paid.
It doesn't say to get paid. It just says that you are supposed to go to the meetings, right? This is a part of the bylaws that is not enforced because I know we have stewards who like never go to the meetings and they're still stewards.
Right.
Right. They were elected as stewards.
He's just using this.
It's a pretext. Again,
but it's all nonsense.
Right. It's a way to craft this narrative like, oh, Alan talks a good game, but if he really wanted to help carriers, then he'd start a podcast and do over 200 episodes where he's helping carriers. And he has I have done that. But, you know, this narrative, oh, I guess he doesn't care because he's not coming to the meetings. And so.
Well, you know, maybe you should bring up and say, hey, I got everybody at my station wants me to be a steward. So people actually want me to do it, except for like one person.
Right. So he goes on. I thought you would approach me after the general meeting and we would talk. But again, you did not. So I want to address that, right? I'll get into what I wrote back because this is an outstanding issue. So I wrote back, this is the first time you've expressed interest in talking to me since I last made the offer months ago.
Right. We've been talking about this for like over a year.
Exactly. And it was quite some time ago where I had reached out and like, hey, if you want to talk, I'm available to talk.
And you brought up at the general meeting to vote.
What are you talking about?
To vote for you to become a steward.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying like he easily could have said like, hey, I want you to come down and talk. But to go back to my response, that you know, this is the first time he's expressed interest in talking since I last made the offer months ago. I would invite you to revisit those emails. I expressed my willingness to have an on-the-record conversation with you. You expressed your unwillingness to have such a conversation with me. When I asked you how we could move forward, you never responded.
When did he ask you that?
That was, like, when did those emails take place? I'd have to go look it up, but it was many months ago.
Yeah, that was because that was the first time you requested it. And we have been, you know, you and I have been at the hall, and you presented it. And then his friends voted you out from becoming a steward. That was over a year ago.
Right. So,
okay.
But I'm saying,
didn't even ask your own station.
Where the ball has been in his court to bring forward the next conversation. You know, I'm not just going to force conversation upon him when we have this core disagreement.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Why is he doing that only to you? Because I don't see him ever doing that to anybody else.
Of course. You've nailed it, Michael.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a policy that only applies to me.
To you.
Yes. Yeah,
so, well, I'm sure it would be for me, too, if I was looking for it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I go on. The ball has been in your court since that time. I don't know why you would expect me to initiate contact with you when you have expressly stated your unwillingness to have such a discussion.
Again, there's nothing on there that says that you have to keep talking to him. He has to install the stewards. And and you're the only one that's bringing it up to be a steward. Okay?
Right. Right. So, I was the only applicant.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he failed at his duty to install you because there's only one other person that's putting on there. So he has to put it in that person in the meantime.
Well, I mean, if he thinks I'm unqualified or if there's some hurdle
Have to be unqualified?
No, but it's his responsibility to appoint with the consent of the executive board. Right. That and he can't just, you know, appoint anybody.
Okay. Like
he should give it some thought. I would hope that a president would give it some thought.
Again, he has to install it. Like that's in the bylaws, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what disqualification do you have to have so that he won't put it? Oh, feelings should not be in there.
That's gonna come up, Michael.
Okay.
So but if he felt
butthurt because you won't kiss his ass.
That should not
be an excuse.
Well, he can speak for himself on that if he would. But again, in this case.
Hey, Alan, I don't see your lips being brown, okay?
No, they're not. Okay. So, but again, in this case, if that was the barrier to him fulfilling this responsibility of filling the job, he could have said something to me. And he didn't until now, just today when I pressed him or yesterday.
I mean, here's the thing, listeners. If you were, you know about anybody who wants to run for steward, what qualification do you think people need? To me, willing to learn, willing to protect carriers,
right,
and willing to do the job as a steward.
Well, you know,
what else do you need?
You may remember an email some time ago when my branch president said, when the executive board believes that someone is qualified, the appointment will be made.
What but he won't say what the qualification
is. Because I asked him that exact thing.
Yeah.
At what qualification
am I missing? Because you have more qualification than most of the stewards in Las Vegas. That's why.
So, going on. Thank you for asking why I have not been to any recent steward meetings. I don't need to wait for the meeting to tell you why I haven't attended. I can tell you now. It's because I feel uncomfortable and unwelcome at the Union Hall. There are things that you have said to me and done to me that have led to this feeling, such as, number one, firing me from the Carrier Academy and telling me, quote, the squeaky wheel gets greased, end quote, because I was agitating for better conditions in the academy.
Now, when there's a squeaking wheel gets greased means yes. What? It's because you talk back?
No. It's because what I said there, because I was agitating for better conditions, because mm-hmm. I had gotten my hand on the manual for mm-hmm. how the academy is supposed to be run. And I'm like, hey, we should do it this way.
I'm sorry, but talking back and all that stuff is part of what stewards do.
Not only that, but that
we're supposed to argue arguments.
That was me giving a hard time to management, mm-hmm. right? That was not me giving the union a hard time.
Right.
That was me writing management and saying, look, this is in the manual. Right. And I remember in that conversation.
So if our president follows what management wanted to get rid of you, who's actually working for management?
Wow.
I'm just asking out of curiosity.
He may have had his own reasons for getting rid of me, but, but this is the issue,
right? But out of curiosity, that means he's following what management wants in reality.
So to go back to
that. Sounds like he's more supportive of management. Now, this is my opinion.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing, it's my opinion that he's just following what management wants. What's good for the carriers.
Well, so if we go back to that episode of mm-hmm. when I got fired from the academy the second time, fired by my own union instead of by management, you know, these things that I was asking for, like, hey, we're supposed to come in early to get the class set up. We should do that. And then he told me, he's like, hey, man, now that you're back in, just keep your head down. Don't ask for this stuff. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I have, you know, that's why these manuals exist, so that we can give people the proper academy. And that's when he told me, well, you know, some people say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I like to say the squeaky wheel gets greased. And then he fired me from the academy.
So he greased you.
Yeah, he greased me. That's exactly right. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And dude, this was, again, to me, that's first blood.
Yeah.
Right.
It's almost like somebody saying, oh, you're not going to follow what the establishment wants, so I'm going to get rid of you.
Right. Because I was making myself a pest mm-hmm. to management.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Why were you being pest to management?
Because they weren't doing what they were supposed to do according to this agreement between the union and management on how the academy would be run.
Oh, you mean it's better for the carriers then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was agitating for, better conditions for carriers in the academy. And the squeaky wheel gets greased. All right, so that's number one. And again, just to reiterate, in my view, that's first blood. You know, because I thought I had an ally in my local union up until that point when I got fired. And I talk about that a lot in that episode. All right, number two, removing me from my position as alternate steward. You use the excuse that the removal was automatic each time new branch officers
were. That has never happened until he did it.
Well, that's what I'm about to say. Each time new branch officers were elected, but you admitted in the meeting that no such provision exists in the bylaws and no such automatic removal of stewards had happened before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is just a way to get me out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. And so why would I not feel welcome down there? Well, that's what I'm listing here. These reasons why, you know, I was trying to serve the members. I was going to the steward meetings. And again, he removed me. Number three, when I previously applied for steward, you said I wasn't qualified, but would not explain what qualifications I allegedly lack. And so we've already kind of touched on that one. And yeah. Dude, there's obviously more. Like when they fired me from being an on-the-job instructor.
So how many stewards that do we get has never read the contract before they became a steward?
Most of them.
A lot of them, yeah. Right? And so the qualification is you don't need to read the contract to become a steward.
Well, and that's the point, right? Is right? These qualifications only seem to apply to me, mm-hmm. and then he won't even say what they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. The qualification is that he wants you to have brown lips.
I don't know.
Okay.
Because he won't say, because when I asked
him. Of course not. Of course he's not going to say, you know, because you know what I'm talking about, brown lips.
Yes, I know what that means. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because Because that's all he wants is people to kiss his ass. Okay. I'm sorry, but who else that we know that likes that to happen? I don't know, somebody named Trump, maybe? I know this is the being not being political, but he loves being kissed ass, right?
Right. So there's...
I'm just baffled. That this is where our union is going backwards, is when people, you know, wanting only to be, act like he's the king and so forth.
Right.
And those are things that I have issues with. Yeah, and this is it's hard to support that because union is supposed to be, have no kings. It's supposed to be democratic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is obviously gatekeeping and blackballing, mm-hmm. right? There's no question about that. This is obvious. And I could have, again, I could have listed more things, but I stopped there. So let me just finish this and then we'll talk about it more. The list goes on, but I'm sure you see the pattern. I have every reason to feel unwelcome. Further, I remember from my previous attendance at steward meetings that they were only attended by stewards. I will be at the next meeting.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So this, it's, I'm just saying this is where our union is going back. Talk of which, talking about the union, I just heard a rumor that Brian Renfro, our national president, says that, hey, don't expect too much for what's going to happen next contract.
That's not rumor. That was on Next Generation Carriers. Okay.
I know, but I'm just saying, you know, so we expect much on the next contract. So here's what I know that I want to talk about on that part. Okay. I was one of the first CCAs that became a regular here in Las Vegas.
Right.
Okay. So I've been regular since 2014. So it's been 11 years.
Okay.
And I was one of the first CCAs who became a regular.
Right. Okay?
Now, the contract started back in 2013, and there were not many people that made regular yet till probably 2014.
Right.
Okay. If I remember correctly, on the pay scale, it says it takes like almost 13 years.
Something like that.
Around
to get
there,
top step.
To get the top step. So if you do the math, that means it's 2026 before somebody's at max pay, maybe even 2027. Means almost not a single CCA, former CCAs are at max pay. So when Brian Renfro, our union president, says, hey, we got this great pay raise for max pay for the first table and or other people max pay, we're going to get the extra $1,000 or $2,000 to max pay and so forth and so forth. Who's getting that?
Only the old-timer carriers
who was there before 2013.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because people like me who don't need the help.
Well, we all need help.
I get you. But dude, the people, I don't have the struggle like Table 2 carriers.
Yeah,
have.
The Table 2 carriers. I mean, here's the thing. In 2013, before 2013, PTFs were the beginning level.
Right.
And they were getting paid $22 an hour.
Yeah, we talked about that. Like
after 2013, we had the CCAs. They were getting paid $15 an hour.
Right.
How much is the CCAs getting paid now? 20? Less than $20 right around an
20.
Hour.
Yeah, yeah.
With all the inflation that's happening,
right,
they're still getting paid less than what they were getting paid back in 2013.
Yeah.
And this is coming after housing market crash.
Right. It's obviously a disservice to any new hires.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, there's a great podcast. I can't believe I haven't mentioned it yet. It's called The Table 2 Ticket. It's a brand new podcast. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, there's still only one episode. But that episode is a banger.
Yes. So I listened to that too.
Yeah.
And it is a good episode.
I sent it to you.
And because what he was saying is where I thought about the max pay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once you think about it, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody's a max pay. No wonder he's agreeing to this.
and as the guy said on Table 2, Table 2 Ticket,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than half of our carriers now are mm-hmm. Table 2. And so there is an opportunity here for real democracy
mm-hmm.
for the Table 2 carriers to stand up for themselves.
If I remember correctly, I think one of the episodes I listened to with BFN
uh-huh.
and Building and Fighting.
Build a Fighting
and ALC. And ALC.
Yep.
And one of the episodes he was talking about is that between Table 1 and Table 2, there's a loss of $250,000 is the difference.
Right. Yeah. Over the course of your career.
Until you make max pay.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So, but nobody's at max pay right now, but they'll be hitting it in the year or two. Finally, some people are going to hit it. Okay.
Right.
Those people have lost over $250,000.
Dude, and he talks about that on his podcast as well, where it's also Adam Crosby is the guy's name. It also, they're paying more, Michael, are paying more for your retirement benefit.
Right.
And that's more money that's lost.
So let's say 5%.
Right. Okay. And then on top of that, you don't have the disposable income mm-hmm. that previous carriers had to just make up the difference by adding more to your TSP because you're in a harder financial situation.
Right.
So the hits keep coming.
So you could be losing thousands of dollars on that on your retirement on the TSP because you didn't get that extra $250,000.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. All of it piles up. It all adds up. And we have a moral obligation to the carriers who are on table two that if we are a union with real solidarity, we got to be lifting them up.
Yeah. And that's why we need only one pay scale, not two.
Well, good news, Michael. That's what we have now.
In reality, yes, because...
because the top step, you know, I got administratively slotted into top step of table two.
Yeah, but why is it still showing up as two tables?
Well, one of the reasons is because our union dues are tied to table one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there may be people who have been out on leave or whatever, and they haven't reached the top yet, even though they got hired a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But for all practical purposes, table one is no more.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
So, go ahead.
All those people that was there, no more because they're all in max pay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the reason why.
Yeah.
And so when our president says, hey, by the way, you know, we got a raise for the people that's at max pay of $2,000 raise.
Right.
Well, that's helping out the people that's there were before 2013.
Right. People like me.
But nobody from after 2013. And do you remember what the percentage was that are CCAs who are not regulars that's in the Postal Service now?
It was like 60-something percent.
Yeah, I heard something between 60 to 70%.
Right. That's what he was talking about on table two. Table two.
That those people are actually on table two now.
Yeah.
Compared to table one.
Right. Most
carriers. That means the majority of the people that's on that pay are on that table two means when he was agreeing to table one, he wasn't doing it for table two.
No.
Which is the majority of the carriers now.
To apologize for Renfro a little bit,
mm-hmm.
we spend, if you stay at the post office, we spend most of our career at top step. And then all of our retirement is based on top step.
Right.
And so that was his argument, was that this helps the most people for the longest amount of time. And so, you know, it's okay to put some focus there.
But when you spend 13 years to get to max pay.
Well, it goes even further than that because half of our new hires aren't even lasting the first year.
Right.
And so they're not getting any benefit from
it. So there is,
a big chunk of our workers are not benefiting. Like I said,
in major cities, most people won't get paid at $20 an hour. But
you can't get by.
Most beginning level pay in most cities, even in Vegas, are usually around $22 an hour. Right now.
Right.
Okay. But then 2013, that's 12 years ago, the PTF started at $22 an hour.
Yeah. And dude, when I got hired in 2006, we've talked about it on here before. My starting pay was in 2006, it was $19 an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is what the CCAs are making.
Right. That's what they're making now is what I made when I started 20 years ago.
With all the inflation that we got and how everything costs so much more money now.
Right.
Hell, the rent for one bedroom apartment back in 2014 in Las Vegas for one bedroom average was around $450. Okay. Average for one bedroom apartment in Las Vegas now is $1,600.
Dude.
Four times that.
That's wild.
So if you were making $22 an hour, you should have got four times that.
Dude, and it goes further because you have the opportunity lost. Right. When you're on table two and you're hurting at the beginning, you can't get ahead in the way that I was able to get ahead as a table one carrier, because I was able to buy the house that we're recording in right now at a time when it was more affordable. And now someone like you on table two, it's impossible because my house, when I bought it, I overpaid for this house at $160,000. Now it's worth about $350,000 and you're making less than I was. So it's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes it so that none of the carriers that starting in the last 10 years can afford to buy a house.
Right. Yeah.
Unless you're in a rural area.
Yeah. I mean, dude, when I talked to Fred Woodley in like rural Ohio, his mortgage is like $400 a month.
Right. Like I said, unless you're in a rural area.
Right.
But if you're in a city, you cannot afford to buy a single house.
Yeah. Right. When I talked to the dudes in Boston one bedroom apartment there is like $3,000 a month.
And for example, in Las Vegas, you had to make $150,000 a year for you to be able to afford that house.
Dude. It's awful.
That's the average going right now in Las Vegas.
Right. Right.
Do we even, are we even any close to that? No, we're only at half that.
Right. So again, we have this moral obligation, and it's something that needs to be stressed, in my opinion.
And that is why when our national president goes, oh, there might not be anything that's going to happen in the next contract.
Right.
It's so depressing.
So to me, this is something that has to be stressed by the members going into the next negotiation, right? This is what we have to think about going forward. If we don't have a contract yet, by the time we get to the convention, it's definitely something that needs to be talked about on the floor.
Yep. But here's the thing. Yep. They do say that Brian, our national president, wants to have send it through arbitration immediately.
I seem to remember that coming out of that same interview was like he would be very quick to send it to arbitration. So if he
does the same thing that he did with our last arbitration, it would be, what, 3 days?
Well,
so what, he's trying to settle the shitty contract before our convention?
Dude, to me, I know I give people the benefit of the doubt too much, but I would say that like these are lessons that were learned from the last go-round where he waited 700 days for what? You know, there was no benefit to waiting all that time.
But
now he's going to go the other way, just send it straight to arbitration.
Because there's going to be no benefit again?
But this is all speculation. Anyway.
It is, because we're looking at the future right now. Yeah.
Okay. And that's why I'd rather focus on...
But here's the thing. Our contract ends in May.
Right. Oh, my God, dude. Already.
Contention, our convention is in August. August,
right.
Which that's 3 months different. Yeah. But the contract can start negotiating 3 months before that, which is in February.
Right. Okay.
And so he has 6 months to make that decision. And here's the problem.
Yeah.
He originally, before the tentative agreement, it was supposed to be November of 2026.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So why did he change it 6 months earlier?
It's a great question.
Because he wants the full control of it before the election. I would agree
with that. That's my speculation as well.
Okay. So here's where I'm hoping. This is where I'm crossing my fingers.
All right.
It is election year.
Right.
If he wants to keep his job, do... A great job on the next contract.
Yeah. If he brings us a killer contract, he's got a fighting chance to win in the next in the next election.
If he says, oh, nothing's going to happen, whatever, he's definitely going to not be the president again.
Right.
Because nobody's going to like that
at all. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, even if he gets a good contract, I have not forgotten.
Right.
And so I have no intention to vote for him because regardless.
Let's say he gives us a good contract now, next year.
Yeah.
Okay. That means we last out on 3 years of a good contract.
Because we knew we had it in him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. You know, so, he's negotiating against somebody.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. So that's it for now. Enough rampant speculation.
Yeah, this is all opinion today and some and our personal issues and so
stuff.
Forth. Yeah,
exactly. Stuff we just kind of wanted to get off our chest.
Yeah. This is some of the frustration that we're going through. Yeah.
Right. All right, everybody. So thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you all next time.